we can't serve the kids in front of us well because we don't feel that alignment. And that's really what we mean by happy.
Hey there, class kickers, and welcome back to another episode of the Kick Some Class podcast, the show that's designed to help you, the educator, kick some class at home, in school, and in life. And today I have with me a very special guest, Suzanne Daly. And Suzanne is an instructional coach. She's nationally board certified, a fellow of the National Writing Project, and author of the book Teach Happier This School Year, which we're going to be talking about today. She has her own blog and podcast and presents at conferences and workshops and all sorts of other good stuff. So Suzanne, welcome aboard. I'm really glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, so as I said that, I'm like, everybody's bio can kind of get to be a tiny bit of a mouthful. So how, as we talk about work-life balance and families and the people that matter to us, how do you keep all those roles in check and in balance for yourself?
Well, I don't, Brian. And I don't know many people who really can do that. So, you know, you had mentioned the book, and that's something we talk right off the bat of, how do we navigate work-life balance?
Yeah.
And the really interesting part is it doesn't exist. So that's why you can't attain it and I can't attain it and anyone listening can't attain it. So it's a really small shift for me in thought and language. And I have tried to evolve away from work-life balance and move towards work-life satisfaction.
Nice.
Because as a teacher, but also as a mom and a wife and a friend and all the other roles that we play, it's very difficult for most of us to be balanced, but we can be satisfied in all of our roles. So I'm not balanced, but I'm satisfied in a joyful teacher and all the other roles behind that role for sure.
I love that. Joyfully imbalanced might be a way that I've been described as well. Not medically, no. But you know, it's interesting because one of the things that, as I started thinking about that word, I'm like, balance is not really the right word. I'm a science teacher at heart, and so this idea of balance is opposition, and I'm like, I think it's more about tension and understanding that there's a healthy tension between give and take and, you know, serve and recharge and family and work, you know. So maybe somebody out there is saying it's just semantics, but I think you hit on it. It's defining that language for yourself, and then that gives you, I don't know if you use the word freedom, but I kind of pick up on that. So I'm going to kind of transition here. Yeah, sure. I was listening to another podcast, and you had mentioned that you used to be a fourth grade classroom teacher. So
yes.
I have my experience of moving out of the classroom. I'm just curious, like, what was that like for you to pack up all the stuff and to watch that door close? Maybe for the last time, to transition to a new role.
It was really tricky, actually. And I believe that the universe was trying to protect me from that exact moment, because I went into labor with my daughter earlier than I thought. And so I never had that moment, but I feel like the universe protected me, because that would have been a whole lot for my teacher heart. So thankfully now in my role as an instructional coach, I still get to teach every day. I was actually, just before this, was in a fourth grade room. And on the day of recording, it's Valentine's Day. So it was electric in there. So that joy, I still get to capture that each and every day, whether it's a fourth grade room or kindergarten or up to sixth grade is primarily who I work with. But you're right, Brian. It's different when you have your own group in that classroom family. I miss that terribly. But it's something I get to rekindle in just a little bit of a different way as I'm around our 15 elementary schools in our school district.
Yeah, and that's just crazy to me. I mean, where I am, we have three elementary schools that feed into one middle and one high. And I'm same deal. I came out of the classroom. I'm 25 years in, so I've been out once before, and this time about a year and a half, and I work K-12. And so it's weird. I actually had a teacher ask me today. I taught fifth grade with a Tinkercad and, you know, sugar the kids up and then run away and send them out of the next class, right? But I thought it was funny that a teacher said, you know, what do you miss? And so I'm passing that on to you. But, you know, I thought I miss that they know me, but I don't know them quite the same. And it does scratch the itch of being with the kids, but yeah, it's a trade-off again. So it's interesting. I'm, you know, kind of knew the answer from my experience. I figured as I heard you in another interview talk about how much you love mm-hmm. your job and just maybe you can just key in on that for a second, to go from the classroom where you know you're making a difference in students to step out and to know you're making a difference for students, but maybe by proxy, how does that work for you?
It's just it's a really different intensity, right? Instead of being so hyper-focused on your 27 fourth graders, I get to be focused on really thousands of kids yeah. every year. And so the thought of that impact, it's a different type of impact, certainly. It's not as personalized as you would with your students who I always say, like, we live together, you guys. Like, we're just, right? You just spend so much time together. So it's certainly a different intensity, but it's still really rewarding thinking that the impact could, you know, reach more than just beyond your 27 kids. It could reach hundreds or thousands of kids a year.
Yeah, I love that. And it was hard, but I think in the first like week, I made that realization like, oh, I don't have 120 students. So many more now. And it's, I don't know. So yeah, it's consolation maybe in those early days. But so I have a confession time. And I mentioned this to you that like, I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, but I did something that for eons, we've been saying, don't judge a book by its cover. And I saw your cover this, and you know how this happened, kind of rolled out on Twitter. There it is. Teach Happier. And I was like, how could this is exactly along my stream. And so I don't actually know now, you know, if I've rightfully judged that idea of that if you are happier, you are better. And I've said this to people. I always hated the cliche, well, let's do what's right for kids. Well, what's right for kids is a happy, healthy, rested, inspired, and connected teacher. That's one of the major things. And after that, of course, a bunch of others. But so how close did I come to the content of the book, maybe, and the mission that you're on, spreading that news?
I mean, chef's kiss, Brian. You did it, right? And we all have walked into our classrooms when we are feeling rested, whole, balanced, aligned. We're really good teachers those days. And we've also had the days where we come in, we're exhausted. We're like a cat with a ball of string, like, whoa, right? And we can't serve the kids in front of us well because we don't feel that alignment. And that's really what we mean by happy. It's not tra-la-la, good mm-hmm. vibes only. That's just not realistic. It means, are we content, aligned, balanced? Are we understanding what those small shifts in our thoughts, language, and actions are that help us feel that way? Because what we uncover in the book is that, unfortunately, it's an inside job. Yeah. I can't rely on my partner, my kids, my students, my colleagues. Nobody can do that important work for me. I can be a part of my own rescue, and it's a real inside job. It's, you know, you were talking about balance earlier, Brian. It's not found, it's created.
Yeah.
And that's a real buzzkill, right? Like, we just kind of want to wake up some days and have things feel good. Mm. And some days they do, but most days they don't. And it's not because we're doing life wrong. It's actually, I believe, because we're doing it right. And we're leaning into our relationships and our work and our homes. And that requires a lot of energy and capacity. And some days we have that. And realistically, some days it's harder to have that, right?
Yeah. I'm like high five through the interwebs, right? Like I found that so many times, and I wish I could remember the guy who said it. And it's that one of the most freeing revelations is that no one's coming. No one's coming to save you. And soon as you said it, like it maybe isn't a great thing, except that it's incredibly empowering to realize it's on you, right? Like I call this, I talked about this, the hero's mindset, that as soon as you take ownership and control of the fact that you may have woken up on the wrong side of the bed, but those kids deserve your best. And look, there's no shame in the fact that days you don't have it. One co-teacher that I work with, he goes, guys, I don't have it today. And you might want to just give me some space. I'm going to do the same for you. We'll come back at it next time. And I'm like, to me, I think that modeling that for kids rather than saying, you know, I'm going to do my best and I'm probably going to fail and I may not treat kids well. Why don't just come out and say it and model that normalcy, right? And then say, we're going to try this again, kind of growth mindset. So I love that idea. And it moves you away from victimhood mm-hmm. and blaming somebody else and complaining and just saying, no, I can make a slight shift. And I'm hearing some, like, I studied some neuro-linguistic programming, and that's what I'm hearing in there is this idea of it's, you have a state of being and you get to control it. And as soon as you realize that, the shift is just one of awareness and choice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that choice isn't easy, right? You know, but so I'm curious if you have this is totally off script now, that not that I have ever really used one, but have you studied any of that, like, you know, neuro-linguistic programming, you know, type stuff?
Yes. And some of that science is referenced in the book, just so that people didn't think I was just making things up. But it's some people could hear that, like, oh, my gosh, it's up to me. And that could be a very overwhelming, you know, thing to think about. But it's actually so empowering
yeah.
that we get to determine not everything in our life, certainly. Right. Positive psychologists say about 10 to 20% is fixed. Yeah. I cannot undo health diagnosis from people that I care about. I cannot bring people back in my life who I love and who have passed away. But that leaves 80 to 90% for me to impact and influence how I'm going to navigate through that season, right?
Yeah.
The time that of the book was the hardest few years of my life. One of the biggest losses was I lost my mom. Now I can't change that. But I absolutely get to decide how I'm going to carry on her legacy, right? And so I can't rely on anybody else in my life, whether professionally or personally, to do that important work for me. That's my work. That's my job. But it actually allows me to move through that really challenging season with as much empowerment and autonomy as possible. And that's a really great way to feel in a really hard time.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is almost like this paradox, right? Like the most difficult challenges that we go through. So my book came out of a period of burnout where, you know, my daughter was born after 17 years of infertility. And then I found myself in the worst health of my life. But it was that. I was given a reason to fix it. And then an ultimatum, sort of like, dude, do you want to miss out on this? Do you want her to miss out on this? And it was that was sort of that slap in the face to say, I can't blame the job. I made choices to do certain things that were death spiral to my health and, you know, awareness and all that other stuff. So it's, yeah, I found that empowerment is, it's not easy, but once you realize that you can control it, at least you realize, oh, I can do something, you know? So good.
And say in how we recalibrate, right? We do.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so I went and checked out your podcast, and it's a really interesting format for me because, you use these short sort of reflection and action pieces. And those have been two really cornerstones for me coming through, like taking some time to think about end game. Who do I want to be? How do I want to be remembered? What kind of dad, what kind of husband, what kind of teacher, you know? And I think a lot of people call that a midlife crisis. I always called it a midlife gift. And I wish I could have scheduled it 20 some years ago, you know, because then to reap the benefits. But, I'm just curious, like, how did you arrive at that format of they're all around 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, I try to make it no more than 7 minutes because, well, we're busy educators and, you know, we've got a finite amount of time and most people listen to it on their way to work on Monday morning, which is really empowering to just try and get in a pretty good, we say headspace or heart space as possible. And it's exactly what you said, Brian. It's a story. I try to put a little bit of science or research in there to give it a little credibility. And then it's a 2-degree invitation. And it's a real small shift in our thoughts, language, or actions, because very few of us have the capacity for a 180-degree anything, right? Like, we're looking for a solid 7. We're going to do a complete 7.
Yeah.
So, you know, understanding the limited bandwidth that most of us have, especially this time in the school year, you know, we're tired. A lot of us, there's been sickness going around in our classrooms or our homes. And so keeping it short and concise. And then what's really neat too is when some educators then bring those small shifts to their students,
yeah,
and start sharing some of those things that have resonated with them into their classroom families or around their dining room tables, which is just really neat.
Awesome. And it's just one of those things that, like, you know, whatever led you to do that, to add to the, you know, the content of the book, to get at that deep heart need to share, you know, and to make a difference in that way. It's always cool to see that next, like, the cascading impact that you have. Just, it's so cool. So I really enjoyed that. I gotta tell you, the first one I saw when I looked after we set up the book was the monotasking. And I'm like, oh man, like, how is this a thing? And I'm, you know, again, like, I heard you say this is a new term for you, but this is what life used to be before we got into this world. I'm sure every generation has had their version of multitasking. The same ideas with, like, Cal Newport talks about what happens to us and when we get distracted. And so I thought, they're really good for anybody that's, you know, listening, hasn't checked it out. All that stuff will be down in the show notes afterwards, but just very concise, actionable, small shifts you can make. And I love that you said 2%, you know, like, it's like, over the long haul, a small shift over time makes a huge difference. I live in a military community, and a buddy of mine is a former, you know, sniper. And you talk about, like, you can be off by a little bit in the close range, you don't see it. But man, as time goes by, a little shift in your health, a little shift in your mindset, a little shift here and there makes a huge difference. And so I love that. So I'm like a super tech nerd, have been most of my life. What you're talking about is meditative and maybe it might seem a little altruistic almost, you know, to say use a technology tool for this. Have you found any or seen anything that are, like, as you travel around, tools that people can use to help in that way?
To help implementing some of this?
Yeah, implementing something like that, or finding that headspace, heart space, to just center yourself and make sure you're ready to bring your best self. Man, this is sounding awful guru-ish, but I'm okay with it, you know, on a Monday morning.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm not a very big techie person at all, but I think that's why some of the ideas I share are underwhelming and people are like, oh, I could do that. So the upcoming podcast this week is, how do we use our reminders app to help us strengthen our social relationships? Because that's what positive psychologists say. 100% of happy people, happy meaning content, aligned, balanced, have strong social relationships. So how do we use our reminders app for that? Or how can we use simply our timer on our phone to either hyper-focus on a task or to actually disengage from a task and force ourselves to not hyper-focus and get into a state of what I also learned, the phrase toxic productivity.
Yeah.
So just really, you know, things that most of us have access to, how do we kind of use them in a different way to help us make these 2-degree shifts?
Awesome. Yeah. I think there's times when you need to pull the plug, and there's times where delete social media off your phone or whatever it is for you, right? You'll find that there's little increments that you can do. So it's good stuff. Books. I'm going to shift to this one. So, you know, we were laughing about this. I probably read or listen to 200 books a year and buy way more than that, unfortunately, for our budget, you know. So, but there are a couple, and I mentioned, you know, the ones over my shoulder that really made a difference for me in coming to that, both writing a book, but also just getting to the place where I had something worth writing about. So I'm just going to ask, you know, like, for you, are there specific books that really pushed you over the edge or gave you that kick that said, oh yeah, I got to do this?
I would say there's two books that really stand out. The first is The Happiness Advantage by Sean Acor. He's just such a brilliant teacher of the science behind happiness and thriving during times of adversity. And he has all these studies and experiments that he's done at Harvard that are just, it just makes it so applicable and practical. And so he's one of my favorite teachers. And then, of course, I mean, it would be anything written by Brené Brown, but The Gifts of Imperfection was a big moment for me, reading and rereading and highlighting and circling and just being stuck on some of her brilliant thoughts of that's the language. That's exactly what that feels like. You know? So she just has found such a beautiful way of putting language to things that you kind of think are unique to you, but she helps us see that really no feeling is unique. Everything's pretty universal.
Yeah. Well, man. And that's kind of there's another comforting thought too, you know, like, especially in the, it's humbling on the positive side where you have this like super bright idea and you're like, no, you're not the first one to have that. But on the dark side, right? Like you're not alone. A bunch of other people have gone through this. And so it's really interesting. I love Brené Brown, but when I would listen, I'm constantly pausing and then taking my own little tangent, which I love. That it's like, if I were ever, you know, going to write something else again, I feel like I'm never going to have writer's block if I listen to a few people. Brené Brown is one of them, you know? So, and I wrote down The Happiness Advantage, and that will probably get purchased shortly after we hang up today. And I'll have to explain the purchase to my wife, but like, I love that, you know, and it's, I don't know if you struggled with this, but we, it's like, oh, you know, they already said it. But, and this is, you know, I don't know if anybody out there, a lot of teachers probably have a book in them, and it might be a children's book. It might be self-help. It might be pedagogy. I don't know, but they didn't say it as you, right? Like you bring something that only you can bring. And there are people in this world where we're hyper connected. I mean, I know you're in the Philadelphia area. I'm, you know, almost in Canada, a few hours to your north, but like, and just met online, and I've connected with people from all over the world the same way. You just don't know who's going to need it said the way you say it. So it's just good stuff. So, I'm going to shift to my three, like these is if I'm doing a study here, these are the questions I'm asking. So, but I'll preface it with this one. I'm not really sure. What's your year total in education?
22.
Awesome. Okay. So 22 years reflecting back, I know I did not feel prepared, or I was aware of how ill prepared I was when I got in the job. Unfortunately, that almost autopsy is not always helpful.
We all feel that, right?
Yeah, yes. Right. So what's something you wish, you know, if you could turn back time to, you know, get some 80s hits in my head again, you know, what would you have wanted somebody to prepare you better for stepping into that classroom?
It's so funny you asked that, because just last week I was talking to pre-service teachers at my alma mater, Niagara University. And I tried to tell them, I said, you know, the bad news is you won't know this until you have experience, but so much of it is noise. And it's really hard to discern what's noise and what isn't. And you're good. That's going to take some time to figure out, but that's the gift that we have with experiences. We're able to now say, nope, none of that does not matter. Here's the small piece that does, right? And so if it is going to move a student forward, this is my litmus test. If it moves a student forward academically, socially, emotionally, yes, that's a full body yes. If it's not, probably just noise. And it's hard in your first couple of years because everything's coming at us so quickly, we can't discern what needs immediate attention and focus and intense, you know, so everything's intense and everything's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why you need really trusted people around us to help guide us and help us silence a lot of that noise.
Boy, I wish I could remember the book. I always get it confused. Chip and Dan Heath, if you look at some of their work.
Oh, Make It Stick.
I don't know if it's that book or not, but it's the Whirlwind and the Wig, and it could be Franklin Covey as well, is another book I read in that same time frame. And they talk about that, the wildly important goal and the whirlwind. And we get caught up in this whirlwind of things that need to be done, and we miss out on what really is the main, you know, the main thing. We've all heard that old, you know, that old saying, but man, that's so true. And I noticed that it's even, I love that you said it's a gift, and man, you're probably a little more positive than I am on this one. It's a gift of having that experience, right? And I found that you either, receive that gift with optimism, positivity, you know, and maybe retrospective kind of thought, or you get cynical. And that just like, that's one of the things that breaks my heart is the veteran teachers that this phrase, if this ever comes out in writing, you know, I'm like TM this moment here, which is like, I feel like I want to write something that says seasoned doesn't have to mean salty. And so many teachers, as they get seasoned, it just comes across as like, ugh, you know, like, man, you need a break. But yeah, like that's so good. It's so good. A lot of it's just noise. So maybe you have answered that. What is that advice? That's the advice you'd give new teachers. Okay. So I'll two for one here. We'll move on to the third one, which is, so much is shifting in education. And a lot of people are trying after the, you know, pandemic to get back to a normal that, in my opinion, wasn't working. So as you look forward, what are the shifts that you would say, like, man, this is what we need to capitalize. Here's where we need to double down. Like, what are those shifts that you're seeing that we could, this is where we need to go, and this is what we need to focus more on?
Well, I certainly think we did bet we're learning more, right? I learned that the Greek, I think this is right, the root word of crisis is to sift. And so while we were in the pandemic, we sifted a lot, right? Mm. And a lot of things fell away. So what's still in that little sifter, I guess?
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we have to focus in on. And so I think some things that we got right during the pandemic and all the like, ooh, as we were trying to navigate that, was we recognized how important it was to see the person behind the student. We have to recognize that these human beings in front of us, whether they are 5 or they are 18, they need a lot on top of just academic support. And so what we, I think, did a really good job of doing is get very creative of how do we help kids feel seen, heard, and supported? That's what we need to continue doubling down on so that we can teach them how to be really great readers, writers, mathematicians, citizens, et cetera.
Yeah.
When we see the kid behind the student. And we have to do that with our colleagues too. We have to see the person behind the principal, counselor, colleague. That's how we make positive, permanent change.
That's awesome. I just last night I saw this, another guy I love. He's in the life coach kind of space. His name is Steve Chandler, and he said that we need creative relationships and courageous action. And that when you get, and I'm thinking of Merrily Adams' book, you know, Change Your Questions, Change Your Life. If you haven't read that one, it's another excellent, excellent book. And
writing it down.
So she talks often about this idea of if you think you know the answer, then you aren't going to grow. You know, it's the learner versus the judger path, she calls it. But so the idea of looking at another person instead of judging that you know what they're going through or what they're thinking, I'm like, man, but that takes maturity. I'm not so sure I want to do that, you know, but then you have a choice, right? So if you get creative about finding that information, and then you got to be courageous with what you do with it. Love that. So, Awesome. I really appreciate this. Great conversation. I just want to give you an opportunity to like plug all the stuff, right? So the book again and socials, anything people can, where can they find you? How can they connect more?
Thanks, Brian. So the easiest place is SuzanneDaily.com, but you can find Teach Happier This School Year on Amazon or ASCD. And you can follow me on Twitter at Daily Suzanne. And then everything else on socials is just called Teach Happier. So we've got a Facebook group, Instagram. So come join us. And it's just a really wonderful community of rational optimists. There's no toxic positivity. I promise you. I won't let it happen.
Awesome. Rational optimist. Love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, Suzanne, thank you so much. And, you know, you guys all know that I'm going to get an extra little plug in here for you. So regardless of what's going on, it is up to you to take this episode to teach happier and get out there and kick some class. So we will catch you guys in the next one.